stories that we like to tell. It's like when getting up early in the morning with our dad, we used to go out and meet up with our uncles and work in the fields.
He was always into the winemaking side, but just did homemade stuff. But everyone loved it.
As members of the family, presenting the wines ourselves, it's very important for us. And I think it's important for people as well to put a face on the wine.
I was born and raised here. I love the family history. I love the seasons. So somewhere deep down, I knew I was coming back.
It evolved. It started with wanting to grow grapes.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 373. This week, we feature Ferio Defoe of Chateau Tholot Mondou in Bordeaux, France. Born in Burgundy to find his way to the wine world of Bordeaux, Ferio Defoe knows a lot about wine. The most important thing he will tell you is to judge for yourself. Wine can be confusing, but if you let your own palate tell the story, you'll always be correct. Ferio visited the LBTV studio in Milwaukee just a few weeks ago to talk about Chateau Tholot Mondou and to pass on common sense thoughts on why wine should not be intimidating. You can also hear Ferio on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the wine term putassier. I'm here with Ferio Defoe, and I'm going to let you say the name of the winery.
The Chateau Tholot Mondou.
Okay, the Chateau part I can get easily. The rest is a little more complicated for someone like me. How are you?
Very good, and you?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much for taking the time while you're here in the States to stop by the Life Between the Vines studios.
Very happy to be here. I mean, first time for me in Milwaukee.
Great.
And glad to be here.
It's interesting that you're here in Milwaukee because many people always see Milwaukee, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. It was a very famous beer making area for many, many years and is no longer, but wine is starting to get a lot more attention here.
Yeah, and it's my job to convince people to drink more wine than beer.
I don't think you'll have to convince me. I'm okay with it. When we were chatting in the other room, you are making wine in Bordeaux, but you were born in Burgundy.
True. So I'm from Burgundy, from Dijon, and I left my Burgundy for Saint-Emilion. Saint-Emilion, it's in Bordeaux, on the right bank of Bordeaux. We say bank because there is a big river in Bordeaux. Left bank is more the Médoc, Saint-Julien, Pauillac. And the right bank is Saint-Emilion and Pomerol. So I left Burgundy for Saint-Emilion. The good point is Saint-Emilion is almost the same philosophy, the same kind of farmer style people like in Burgundy. So for me, it was quite easy to move from Burgundy to Saint-Emilion.
And correct me if I'm wrong, left bank is more Cabernet and right is more Merlot, generally speaking.
Totally true, yes.
Great.
On the right bank, you have more Merlot, Pomerol and Saint-Emilion are famous for that. This is the Merlot kingdom, I will say. And if you go more on the Médoc area, you will have a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc.
And this is mostly because of the soil, or is it combined with the crazy weather there? Or how does that affect the fact that those two grapes are split up like that?
It's because of soil, of course. You don't plant salad on a clay soil. So in Saint-Emilion, we have the chance to have a lot of limestones. And limestone soil can produce those kind of very chalky, full of energy Merlot. At Tholot Mondou, we have a bit of clay. Clay will bring some power to the wine. And for that, we use those kind of varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon or Franc, which needs more power to bring some more aromas. So that's why the left bank is more with gravels, so it's good for the Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, and we have more limestone in Saint-Emilion. That's why we use more Merlot.
You were saying that, I know a lot of our listeners are very aware that Burgundy's winemaking philosophy is different, but for you, was that a hard adjustment going to Bordeaux?
Not at all, because we try to bring a new vision at Tholot Mondou. We try to bring something new. The chateau was sold 2 years ago by a French reinsurance company, and it means that we are a new team now working for Tholot Mondou with a new vision of what is the terroir of Tholot Mondou, of our piece of terroir of Saint-Emilion, and we decided to manage it the way we want, because as we say, we produce the wine we like. Because if we don't sell it, we can drink it.
Being born in Burgundy, were you raised in a winemaking family?
Not at all. I'm from a real estate family. But I was born with a glass of wine in my hand. So that's why I was always in love with wine. And I wanted to be part of this kind of life. And I studied wine business, wine making in Burgundy and in Bordeaux. And what I like in Bordeaux, that's why I moved from Burgundy to Bordeaux, is this kind of piece of land that we can choose the beautiful terroir we have. We all know Bordeaux as a business land, but Bordeaux is first of all a huge terroir that we need to rediscover and to show again to the people.
How long have you yourself been in the wine business?
It's a bit more than 10 years.
You've been around for a while. Was it an intent of yours to end up in the wine business, or did you spend time in real estate? Is that where you came from?
I don't know. My parents were in the real estate, but me, I studied directly after my high school into the wine studies. Directly. This is my first passion, and it was my first job as well.
Do you make your own wine?
Not yet, but I drink a lot.
For our listeners, again, to understand the French thinking behind wine, I mean, many people always say that to the French, wine is food. How would you interpret that to an American, your passion of wine? Can you interpret that for an American?
It's quite simple. Wine for us, it's like bread or cheese. It's part of the meal. We drink wine, first of all, because it's an ingredient of our dinner, of our lunch. It's this for 1,000 years. It was a way to clean the water because of the alcohol. And now we have clean water in France. Yeah. So we drink wine for passion. So that's why we always have a glass of wine in our table in France. So it's really now a part of our meal, like bread, like cheese. We need a glass of wine too.
And in your own tastes, coming from Burgundy, being in Bordeaux, are you fairly broad about what you drink, or are you more specific?
I drink absolutely everything. I mean, it depends on my mood. It's as simple as this. Wine is made of passion. Wine is a pleasure beverage. So it depends on my mood. It depends on my day. If I had a bad, hard day, if I want something simple, I would drink a young wine, whatever, Burgundy or Bordeaux. If I want a bit of freshness, a bit of light body, I will go more on Pinot Noir. It can be Willamette Valley in US or Burgundy. But if I want to be very serious, I will go on a very old vintage of Bordeaux. It really depends on my mood.
See, a hard day, I'll just go with bourbon.
I love hard days.
Yeah, me too. I'm curious, from your opinion, how do you view, you mentioned Willamette Valley, which, and they're making some extraordinary Pinot Noirs up there, but how do you view the wines in America?
I mean, I discovered American wines during my first trip in Napa. It was 4 years ago, and I was more than surprised to taste those beautiful wines in Europe or in Asia, or mainly in Europe. I'm living in Europe, but we were not able to find the top qualities of the American wine. We knew Opus One, we knew those big labels. But when you go in Napa by yourself, you can find beautiful gems that we cannot find or cannot afford in France because of the importing tax and so on.
Sure.
So, I mean, there is no jealousy, there is no competition. We are not producing the same wine. We are not sometimes in the same philosophy. It's a different way of life, different way of spirits. So we need this competition to be better. Thanks to Americans, thanks to Australians, thanks to South African, France started to do better and better and better wines. It's very uncomfortable to have strong competitors like you. So we need you to do better year after year, vintage after vintage.
As we need you. And in the end, it's a brotherhood. You're all farmers.
We are farmers. We grow grapes, right? First of all. Yeah. I mean, we are, thanks to the soil, thanks to the terroir, we can produce grapes. And then we are just here to change those grapes into juice and then into wines. So we need to have the best raw material, the best grapes to make the best wine. So we are farmers, first of all. Luxury farmers, okay. Comfortable farmers. But we are in the vineyard every day.
Sure. that would be the best part of the job, just being able to spend time in the vineyard because it's so peaceful.
It's a big chance. I mean, every day driving from Bordeaux to Saint-Emilion, I spend 10 hours at the chateau every day in the middle of the vineyard. We have a huge view on the Saint-Emilion village. It's peaceful. And first of all, it makes me remember that, yes, we are nothing in this huge world. And definitely, yes, I will never change my life.
No, I can't imagine. What a beautiful place to be.
Oh, yeah.
I regard many of the French having much more of a broader view of wine in general because of it is in your blood. As you look at the whole world in terms of wine, are there other areas around the world that you drink wine from that you really enjoy?
There is so many good places in the world. So many good places, but I'm traveling a lot. So when I'm in US, I try to drink US wines. When I'm in Germany, I try Mosel. I'm a big fan of white wines. We don't produce white wines in Saint-Emilion. So I enjoy, of course, Burgundy. I'm from there, but I'm a big fan of Riesling. And I can drink Alsace or Mosel, Germany, German wines. I start to re-drink a lot of Tuscany, Piemonte wines as well. I love Nebbiolo. Australia, there is the amazing Pinot Noir near Melbourne in the Mornington Valley. And I was in South Africa for the first time, and I had time to spend 1 week visiting estates over there. And I was surprised by Pinotage. It's a beautiful local cépage. I love it.
It's a real challenge for someone like you to be out here visiting and say, hey, look at me, try my stuff.
Yeah, we are lucky to, I'm very lucky to be French in terms of wine. We are so French in France. But no, we are lucky. We started with on the right at the right place. We export wine all over the world for decades and maybe centuries, so it was easier for us. I admire those kind of guys from Australia, from US now to do this beautiful job and bring some competition into the wine world. But yes, there is a huge offer today. And thanks to the US, you make it easy for people to taste varieties. Mm. You were the one who said, okay, we drink Merlot, we drink Cab Sauv, we drink Cab Franc, Riesling, and so on. There is a problem for Bordeaux, because Bordeaux, we are doing blend. We blend wines. Sure. So we can live with, thanks to our brand. The chance we have is, I'm from Trolomondo, I work for Trolomondo. It's one of the oldest brands of Saint-Emilion. We produce wine under this name for more than 300 years. So people knows, collectors knows, and drinkers knows this estate. So the game is to make sure that people never forget you.
Yeah.
So you have to travel. You have to travel and then you have to open bottles. And this is a simple way to show your wine to the world, is to open bottles and share.
Sure.
Wine is made for sharing. So we do it.
Oh, we appreciate that. And you have a second label, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And that is?
This is Mondo. Mondo is the second label. Don't say this is a second wine because I don't like second. I love to be first. So this is the other wine of Trolomondo. It's made from the same soil, same plots. It's just a selection. It's mainly coming from the limestone soil. Limestone will bring some energy, some finesse, some purity to the Merlot. It's almost 100% Merlot, this cuvée, this label. It's a very small production, 20,000 bottles each year, each vintage.
I'm curious about the time you spent in Napa. Did you go to Sonoma at all, or just to Napa?
Never Sonoma.
Okay, I was just curious. When you were in Napa, did you have a chance to peek in the cellar and just see how things were done? Were they radically different than what you're used to?
Yeah, so my first trip was 4 years ago in Napa. I was still working in Burgundy, and I was there to study the business in Napa to check how they work direct sales business. But at the same time, I was there to study the winemaking and the winery way of management. And I was very surprised because it's managed very like we do in Burgundy or in Bordeaux. There is a huge work for the soil. So I was at the top wineries in Napa. I was at Arlan, I was at Screaming Eagle, I was at Colgin. So I was very lucky
sure.
To try those wines and to check those wineries. And I was amazed by the huge work they do on their soil, on the, because, and I'm sure that 90% of the business is in the vineyard. 10% is the winery.
Sure.
We are just here to translate the soil into a juice which became a wine. And yes, so they work a lot, the soil. And then they work more like Bordeaux for the winemaking in terms of blending, in terms of winemaking. They use mainly Bordeaux cépage, Bordeaux varieties. That's why.
Sure.
But in terms of soil, in terms of vine management, they work very pretty much like Burgundy.
Now, here in America, technology, and I could speak to probably Australia and many other countries, technology is really seeping heavily into the wine business. Is it like that for you in Bordeaux? Is it becoming a hindrance, or is it something that's very helpful to you?
Again, the biggest job has to be done in the vineyard. Of course, you need to have a good winery to make good wines. It depends again about your soil and about your variety, if you use concrete eggs or steel vats or whatever. For me, a good wine is not the expression of the winemaker, but it has to be the expression of the soil. So our philosophy is to just to have the reflect of each terroir we have into the final bottle. So we don't want to have to give any intervention, any winemaker touch into our wines today. So that time when we used a lot of different kind of vats and so on, for us at least, is a bit done. We don't need that. We have a big terroir. And you see, evolution is quite simple. Sometimes we go back, back to the future.
Yeah, no, that's how it, well, I guess you have to try, you have to experiment a bit.
We did it. We did it. It's done now. Yeah. We did it, and we don't need it anymore. But maybe the next generation will say, they did a big mistake, why they did that. But at the moment, we are very happy with that.
Then they'll have to figure it out.
Yeah.
In the United States, we've had some issues with labor, not always being able to have the people, the vineyards having the people they need to be able to harvest. Is that an issue in France at all these days?
Huge.
Is it really?
Huge issue, yeah. Huge issue because of the regulation, because of the rules, because of the rules. It used to be before made for every year what it was the students, because they were going to university from October. So they were free in September for the harvest. Now we start the harvest very early, end of August or early September. And university is starting early September as well. So it's tough to find people. Plus, the big problem is harvest was like a huge party for 1 month.
Yeah.
Eating, drinking, walking, laughing. It was the philosophy of the harvest. This is the result of 1 year of huge work waiting for nature, Mother Nature, to give us the best fruit possible. So it was for us a celebration. And we were used to give good food, a lot of wine to the workers. Now we cannot, because the new laws in France say to us, don't drink too much, don't eat too much. If you cook for your guests, for your employees, you have to check about if everything is very clean. You have to keep some samples to show if there is any sickness then. So it's too complicated. So now we work with companies, and we hire 30 people per day, and they come when we want. It's easier to manage. So yes, it's quite tough to find people now.
That's a shame. I have to imagine, because it isn't, again, it's in your blood, that sort of hurts a little bit to see that. Imagine some of that has to be, but also in the end, that idea of a celebration, it should be, harvest should be a celebration.
It's a celebration. We are lucky to have fruit. I mean,
yeah.
We cannot control nature. We cannot control frost. We cannot control hail. We cannot control irrigation in France. We cannot add any water in the vineyard. We cannot give some security, add some security for the ale on the vineyard. So yes, it's a celebration when we have fruit. I mean, I would say something not very American. We are not producing Coca-Cola,
so it's
not
okay.
It's not the same taste every year.
No,
this is the magic of our wines. Is each vintage are different. We want to show that every vintage make a different wine. So that's why for us, harvest is a celebration. So we try to keep this celebration. So at the end of the harvest, we try to organize a big party with the people who work for us during the harvest. We organize a big, big food. We have the chance to have a Michelin star restaurant inside the property. So the chef is good enough to cook for 70 people. And we open huge bottles of wine. And we finish very late in the morning.
You're making me hungry and thirsty. I'm going to dread this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Have you entered the world of mechanical harvesting at all?
We don't use mechanical harvesting.
I didn't think so.
Only physical, human harvest.
Is there much of that going on in France, though, the mechanical harvesting? Because I know many machines are made there.
Many good machines are doing a very good job. For our kind of wine, there is no reason to use machine because, first of all, we have time. And we forget that we have time sometimes. So we have the chance, economically, financially, to have this time and this money to harvest by hand, because the eye of the harvester, the hand of the harvester, is doing the best job in the vine. Then, of course, we have a sorting table with some other people, but we have to take care of our grapes. We have to be non-violent with the grapes to keep the juice, to keep the freshness of the grapes. Plus, again, we have to make sure that we have time. And time is everything for us. Sure. It's like a bottle of wine. You can wait for 30 years and open it then. So, slow life is good too sometimes.
I would agree. Slow life is not a bad thing. We're not like that over here. But you probably know that already. So it's a question I've been posing to winemakers and people in the business, and it's a little tougher question, so if you need a minute to think about it, please do. For all the times you've done interviews and talked to the press, what is the one question you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Very good question. The question I would love the people ask would be very easy question. Because wine is made of pleasure, is made of passion, and sometimes we go too far for very technical questions. How many grams of sulfites, how many grams of blah, 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 and so on. I mean, I would say we fucking don't care about that. The most important point is, do you like the wine or not? It's as simple as this. So I just need the most simple question possible. Not because I don't want to answer, not because I don't know how to answer. It's just because don't forget that wine is made for sharing, it's made for pleasure. So the question I would love that people ask me is, do you like your wine? Yes or not? That's it.
That's a very good answer, thank you. Does it make you a bit crazy when you have people that are expecting descriptors from you when they should be able to determine that for themselves?
Everybody tastes wine in a different way. When I taste wine with some people, I never talk about the wine. I just said, okay, the vintage was like this, rainy, cold, dry, blah, blah, blah. But I never say it smelled like plum or something else. When you're in Asia, they don't have the same fruit. When you're in US, they have a different taste as well. And sometimes you can read that, oh yes, this wine was smelling red cedar from Lebanon. Do you already smell red cedar from Lebanon? Not me. So I don't know how does it smell. So no, I never talk about the aromas. You have to make your own idea about the wine. And don't be shy about it. You can use the word you want. There is no regular vocabulary. You can say the word you want and you can talk about the wine the way you want. There is no obligation to talk with those specific words. If you have some fruits that we don't have in France, maybe you can find some same taste, same nose, same smell as some fruit you got here. And I was in Cambodia. This is the right example. I was in Cambodia 2 months ago, and the sommelier, she was a very good sommelier in Cambodia in a 5-star hotel, beautiful restaurant. She was talking about some specific fruit they have there to talk about my wine. And I didn't know those fruit. And I said, yeah, finally, everybody can have a specific words to talk about the wine. That's why we never give any specific smell or specific aromas for my wine.
That's excellent. Good for you. it is the idea of keeping it simple. So obviously there is a tasting room as well as a hotel there at the winery, is that correct?
Correct, yes. This is the philosophy of Trolomondo from many decades now. The former owner, she was a grande dame of Saint-Emilion, Madame Christine Valette. So she decided to open a guest house in the chateau almost 20 years ago. And then this guest house was so famous that she hired another chef, and this chef made a beautiful cuisine and started to be a Michelin star restaurant, one Michelin star. Of course, because we want to be a bit smart, we decided to say, okay, after a big tasting, you want to have a big lunch. Then you're a bit drunk, so stay at the chateau. You will have a good rest because you're too drunk, you cannot drive. So, you know, in Bordeaux, we try to be smart sometimes. So yes, we have 6 rooms at the chateau, in the middle of the vineyard, near the chateau as well, on the top of the hill, so with beautiful view. And it's part of our philosophy. I mean, this chateau got no doors. The vineyard is open to everybody. It's not a golden jail. It's a place that we want to share with our guests, with visitors. So anybody can come and taste. There is always some bottles to drink. Again, wine is made for sharing, and we want to keep it like this. This is the philosophy. This is the DNA of Trolomondo, is to have good rest, good food, good tasting.
Excellent. I agree with you. So for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about the winery online, what is your website?
So you can go very easy. You can go on Google, and you can write Trolomondo in 2 words, and you can search for it. You will find our website, which is www.troplon-mondo.com, and you will find every information. This website is not made to talk only about the wine, but also about the philosophy we have, the restaurant, the chef, our supplier for food, for truffles, for cheese. There is, of course, a long and deep explanation of our vineyard. Again, vineyard is 90% of the job, 10% is the winery. There is some beautiful pictures of each season. So it's not focused only for our wines, but for the full DNA of the chateau, the full philosophy of the chateau.
It's a very unique website. I like what you guys have done with it. It's very, very different for wine. Ferial, thank you very much for taking the time while you're here in the States. I hope you have a great trip, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much for your time, and wish you too, and every people who hear that you can join us at Trolomondo and visit us.
Learn more by visiting trolomondo.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.